Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live Monday, and so happy to be back with you. Thank you so much for being here with us as we start another great week of programming here. Second hour today, Carlo Broussard is going to be here with us, and we're going to do the Bible blueprint for the church. There are many people who accept Jesus as their Lord and Savior, but do not accept the church. So we're going to look into the Bible and see where is the evidence that Christ is the founder of a church and that that church survives even into today. You are welcome to call whether you're Catholic or Protestant or none of the above, second hour. First hour, I believe we are going to talk about, well, we are going to talk, but I believe that the topic we are going to talk about is one of the most vital, important topics of our time. It's one, in many ways, I think, that people are loath to speak about because it produces a great deal of anxiety in us. We're not exactly sure which way to go, which direction is the moral direction to go with the whole topic of transgenderism. And we have one of the best people in the world to help us talk about transgenderism this hour. You're welcome to call 888-318-7884 if you have a question, if you'd like to get involved. And certainly this hour, anyone is welcome to call, whether you're Catholic or not, whether you're a believer or not. If you want to have an intelligent, respectful, honest conversation about the whole transgender movement, 888-318-7884. Our guest is Mary Rice Hassan. She's the Kate O'Byrne Fellow in Catholic Studies at the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington, D.C. She also directs the Catholic Women's Forum, a network of Catholic professional women and scholars seeking to amplify the voice of Catholic women in support of the human dignity, authentic freedom, and Catholic social teaching. She's a mother of seven. She's the author of a whole bunch of stuff, and we are just so happy to get to welcome her back again. Mary Rice Hassan, thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much. Wonderful to talk with you.
Do you think I'm right that there's a certain kind of a cringe element to this? It's so intimate, it's so personal, and we just don't know what to do about transgenderism, how to deal with it.
Yeah, I think there's a natural desire to want to ensure that everyone's dignity is respected, that people who are hurting have support, and that they don't perceive that we're being callous or indifferent to suffering. But by the same token, there's a lot of confusion around there, or, you know, out there in the culture in terms of responses, in terms of what the law should do, in terms of what Catholic schools should do. And so this is a difficult topic. And in fact, when I started speaking about it, say, 4 or 5 years ago, I would, at the end of a talk, you know how people come up, people would come up and say, well, my neighbor's best friend's daughter is experiencing issues around identity or is identified as transgender. Now, at the end of a talk, there are multiple people coming up and saying, it's my daughter, it's my son, it's someone I'm close to, someone I love. So I think these issues, as the culture has been saturated by gender ideology, these issues are hitting closer to home.
Again, our number 888-318-7884. You are welcome to call with your questions for our guest, Mary Rice Hassan. It seems, and I imagine this might be one of the things you get canceled for saying, but it seems so obvious that there's some kind of contagion going on, that young people are almost being, I don't know, encouraged and in many ways kind of, it's a sneaky kind of like, well, everyone's talking about this, so this is a way of getting attention, or this is the way of me being special. Do you have the sense that there's a kind of contagion of transgenderism?
Yeah, we can see it in the numbers. So, for example, Gallup just came out with a poll that said of this youngest generation, Generation Z, which is in high school and early college, we have about 16% of that generation identifying as LGBTQ. And of that number, about 2 to 3% identify are transgender identified. And that may not sound like a lot, but even 10 years ago, those numbers would have been less than 1%.
Yeah.
In other words, there have always been people who've struggled with identity, but now we're seeing this just really increasing, and the numbers, particularly in terms of adolescence, is spiking. So it's definitely a growing problem. But I think the thing to perhaps for your listeners to realize is that this issue is something that's affecting the entire culture. So even if it's not affecting you and confusing you about who you are, it's changing everything
right
about how we live, how we relate, how we speak. And so that, you know, people need to realize this is affecting your life.
Yeah, it is. It's everywhere. I have to say, almost every day, in some material that I read in the course of preparing for that day, somebody got canceled for saying something very basic. This morning, I saw a story about a young man studying in an education department in a secular school and had tweeted out, a man is a man and a woman is a woman, and they suspended him from his education graduate work because that's not an acceptable thing to say. That seems insane. I don't know how else to say it, but that seems insane.
Yeah, there's a lot of confusion about sex and gender. So we know what sex is. Sex is determined by biology, and there are two sexes. Even though you'll hear out in the public, no, sex really is a spectrum, or sex is, there are more than two sexes. And what confuses that issue is the fact that sometimes, in rare cases, you will have someone born with an ambiguity in their genitalia, or some disorder that's manifested through their hormones, or a problem with their chromosomes, where it may be ambiguous at birth. But that doesn't mean they're not male or female. They're just as male as female by design as any of the rest of us. It's just something went wrong in that development, and it may take a little while to figure out, you know, what their body is really oriented towards. There are only two sexes, male or female. But in the late 50s and early 60s, this idea of gender as being sort of a social construct and capturing something about the our social roles came into play. And people got used to using the word gender when they really meant male or female, or they meant sexual difference. And then through academia over the past 30 years, this idea of gender as being detached and separate from sex has undergone it's tremendous theorizing. But now the idea is, your gender is determined by how you feel, your identity, your self-perception. In other words, it's a completely subjective measure. So you've got half the population that is still using gender to mean male or female, when we should just say sex. My sex is male, my sex is female, not gender, because gender has been captured by those who have redefined it from its, right, the original discussions. And now it means anything. It means whatever you identify as.
Is the thing is, though, it's striking to me that this is presented as fact, where there's no science that would say this. There's not a scientist who said, oh, we finally discovered, that there's a difference between gender and sex. And you might be a woman by sex, but a man by gender. It's just a thing that people made up.
Right. Well, that's especially important to realize, since science, starting in the 70s and 80s, actually started making better distinctions about sex. So, for example, you had sex-based medicine come into play, where right, people realized that women's bodies are different from men's. And so science improved because it started paying attention to that difference. And yet at the same time, on the level of cultural discourse, we have this idea that, no, the word gender is self-identification, and you will get canceled if you deny the identity that someone else is asserting. So, for example, one of the trigger things on the internet is if you say males can never be women, because there are those activists and academicians and people on the left who will say trans women, in other words, a male who identifies as a woman, is a woman just because he identifies that way.
Right. And it's like you all have to go along.
People, but there's. Mm-hmm.
Well, I was thinking,
yeah, and
about,
there's nothing different about that person's body. In other words, someone who identifies as female, he has a male body. Even if he alters it by surgery or hormones, if he died tomorrow and you exhumed his body a year later, scientists would look at it and say, this guy's a male.
Yeah.
So you cannot change sex. It's all in the subject of perception and identification.
And certain things that I had taken to be respectful, like a Catholic World reported that Rachel Levine, who works for the Biden administration, was the way they expressed this was a biological man who identifies as a woman. That seemed to me a respectful way of describing this. And they were banned from Twitter for saying that. What is that about?
Well, it's about trying to cancel any idea that doesn't go along with the progressive orthodoxy. So our new president at the Ethics and Public Policy Center is Ryan Anderson. He wrote a well-regarded book that came out about 2 years ago called When Harry Became Sally. Well, Amazon has now taken that off. It's out of
you can't buy it.
Roster. Yeah. So you can't buy it.
No.
And they're canceling him because the idea is offensive. The idea that we're going to insist that there's a reality, there's a truth to our bodies. And that means that our language needs to be connected to that truth. So once you deny the basic truth, you'll notice we see this corruption of language.
Our number again is 888-318-7884. We particularly want to talk about this from our perspective as Catholics. So what does the church have to say about this? How might this create a challenge for Catholics? There are so many sides of this and things to get to. I almost don't know where to go, but I do want to let you know a couple things. One, if you are a Christian person who would like to know more about this and how this affects your faith and how you can think these things through, our guest Mary Rice Hassan has a website called personandidentity.com, personandidentity.com, and you can go there for some clear thinking about all of this, thinking that I hope that will be helpful to you. Again, our number here, 888-318-7884. We have to take a break. There are more things I want to ask you. There's about a million people on the line that want to ask you questions. But Ryan Anderson's book is not available on Amazon.com because it's unacceptable to them. I just want you to know that our producer, Darren, looked it up, and you can still buy Mein Kampf. So Mein Kampf is available, but When Harry Met Sally is not available. I'll leave you with that to contemplate while we take a break, and we'll come right back with Mary Rice Hassan.
Catholic Answers Live.
Hi, this is Cy Kellett. Don't forget to check out the latest episode of our podcast, Catholic Answers Focus. You can listen each week to the world's premier podcast on Catholic apologetics at CatholicAnswersFocus.com or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Catholic Answers Focus, now available at CatholicAnswersFocus.com.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit MysticMonkCoffee.com. That's MysticMonkCoffee.com.
EWTN is now on Twitter. Get short, timely messages from EWTN on your computer or cell phone. It's easy to stay up to date on a wide variety of topics. Pro-life news, Vatican announcements, catechesis, apologetics, the latest EWTN programming, and more. You can link to EWTN on Twitter from our homepage or go to twitter.com/EWTN. At work, at home, at school, and on the road, stay connected to your world with EWTN's Twitter page.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. A vital issue in our time is how we are going to respond to the movement to redefine or maybe define out of existence is a better way to say manhood and womanhood. This is a great conflict. It's going to continue to be a great intellectual battle in our society, maybe for a long time to come. One never knows, however. Maybe that people will notice at a certain moment that the emperor has no clothes, and we won't find ourselves in that. As we do intellectual battle, however, for clear thinking, we can thank the Lord that we have people like Mary Rice Hassan, our guest this hour, the Cato Byrne Fellow in Catholic Studies at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, who has done a great deal of thinking. I believe you're the founder, actually, of the Catholic Women's Forum. Is that right?
Correct. Yes.
Did you become animated and interested in the transgender thing in part out of a defense of women and womanhood? Because it really seems like it's horrifying what's happening, for example, to women athletes who are, essentially being excluded from their own sports because they can't compete with biological males who are presenting themselves as women. Is that kind of where this grabbed your interest?
Yeah, you know what? I got a grant to study it about 6 years ago, and because it was just an area I was interested in. But we held a symposium, the Catholic Women's Forum held a symposium on gender ideology in response to some of Pope Francis's comments warning about gender ideology, just like Pope Benedict was also very concerned about this. And so there was a woman in the from the Vatican, the woman's office, who came over and gave a talk as part of that. And it was after that that we put together our team to work on this, because we could see that the church needed to have a coordinated response in terms of collecting resources, writing about this. But to your question about how this is affecting women, absolutely, women have the most to lose. For example, if the Equality Act passes, or under state laws that put into place the idea of gender identity as being this category that trumps every other category, it trumps sex. And what that means is that if you're a woman and you're hospitalized, and you have a roommate, usually men and women are separated. Well, under this, if you have a male who identifies as a woman, he's got a right under these laws to be put into the women's ward or women's floor. So you could have a man sharing that room with you, someone who's a biological man. If you have a daughter who's going in for her first exam, you know, GYN exam, and usually you have a chaperone in there with a doctor and things like that, and you ask for a woman. Well, if there's a man working in the office who identifies as a transgender woman,
oh, wow,
you can't say, not you. And the same thing, women's prisons. You know, there are people who are incarcerated, and yet all of a sudden you can have a man who is your cellmate because he identifies as a woman, or at least he's demanding that. So this ripples throughout society. Women need to think, any place where you want privacy or you want safety, how about a rape survivor's support group? That's usually for women for a reason. And yet you can have a man who identifies as a woman who says he wants to be part of that group. So this whole thing threatens women, and not only denies who we are, because you're eliminating the significance of sex, male or female, but it really puts women in circumstances where our safety and privacy is going to be compromised.
I hadn't thought, you know, when you start thinking through, the logical consequences are unbelievable. Among the consequences is just raising generations of confused young people. And I don't know if I'm alone in this, but it seems to me like adolescence is hard enough, trying to figure out your sexuality and how to be an adult, you know, and a sexual creature as God made you. It doesn't seem to me this is helping at all.
Yeah, and you put your finger on something. Adolescence in particular, we're seeing a spike, a rise in the number of adolescents who are identifying as transgender or non-binary. And disproportionately, they are girls. Now, anyone who's a female remembers back to puberty. It is a tough time. You're dealing with your own body changing, but all of a sudden different kinds of attention that may not be welcome, confusion about your feelings. And anyone who's got other struggles as well, this transgender idea, this idea that you don't fit in, you don't feel comfortable with your body, well, now there's a solution for that. You must really be trans. And that's one of the problems with what's happening in schools, because many of the young people I've talked to or their parents who've been exposed to this and sort of started down the transgender road, many of them first learned about this in school. Then they go to the internet and they see all these YouTube videos and all this information that tells them that the source of their unhappiness, the source of their discomfort with their body, is that they really must be a boy and that they really are transgender. And it becomes the solution that kids who are hurting grasp onto, because it promises a healing, and yet it doesn't do that at all.
Are we looking at a future in which children will be chemically altered and physically mutilated?
Oh, that's happening already. So what happens, especially with, you know, if you have a young child who is pre-pubertal, nobody is going to put that child on drugs, at least not yet. But the current thinking in the psychological community, and that's been accepted by the American Academy of Pediatrics, is that if you have a confused child You should allow them to dress as the opposite sex. You should affirm them by calling them whatever name they choose. So you're inducing psychological confusion because you're affirming them as someone they're not. But then when they get close to puberty, a child who has been living out this sort of fantasy that they really, a girl is really a boy or a boy is really a girl, they're going to face this prospect of their body changing. And so that's when the gender docs step in and they say, aha, we have a solution for that too. We'll put your child on puberty blockers. In other words, we'll arrest their development, the development of their bodies, which also affects bone growth and other things, their executive functioning. But we're going to put them on these puberty blockers because if they're really trans, then it's easier to manipulate their body down the road. And what we found is that almost 98% of those kids who start on puberty blockers go on to cross-sex hormones. And if you have a child who started on puberty blockers and then is on cross-sex hormones, that child is sterile because their sexual organs have never developed. And then when you introduce the opposite sex hormones, it compromises their fertility. So you're seeing decisions made when a child is pre-puberty that are going to have ramifications for the rest of their lives. And, you know, some people, kind of activists on the other side or people who are pushing this through the culture say it's a myth that children are going to be operated on, things like that. And I can tell you for sure it's not. Yeah. Because there is an observational study going on right now funded by NIH. And the reports in that, the study reports, report mastectomies on girls as young as 13. In other words, a girl who feels uncomfortable, she's put on puberty blockers, and then she starts cross-sex hormones, well, her discomfort with her breasts is going to increase because she's trying to convince herself she's a boy. And so there's this push then for this unhappy teenager to solve her problems by referring her for a double mastectomy. And we know that's happening, and we know genital surgery is happening on boys who are 16 and 17. I mean, this is just barbaric.
It's child abuse is what it is. It's just mm-hmm. child abuse. And the fact that a society that will kill its children will eventually decide it's going to abuse its children as well. Our guest is Mary Rice Hassan. She's much more articulate, and I'll be frank with you, more patient than I am. So I'm going to let the callers speak with Mary. It's really horrifying. I feel viscerally horrified by what you're saying is being done to minors, people who, I mean, they can't even get a driver's license.
Exactly. There are all sorts of things that we realize they do not have the maturity or judgment to choose and choose prudently, no matter what their feelings are. And yet parents are getting bullied if they don't affirm their children and going down that path because parents are told your child is going to commit suicide if they do this, because children who experience these things do have higher rates of mental illness. They have higher rates of what's called suicidal ideation. But this is not the solution. The solution is to deal with the underlying issues, because when you look at the longitudinal research, the suicide rate remains high, even after people go through all of these transitions. So that's not the cure.
Let's go to Noah in Westmont, Illinois, as our first caller. Noah, delighted to have you here with us. Thank you very much for your call. Please go ahead with your question for our guest, Mary Rice Hassan.
Hi, thank you guys so much for having me on. I'm really, really appreciative of you guys doing a talk like this. I know it's really controversial, but really, really important, and I'm so glad to have you guys as a resource. I've been listening to you guys for a long time now. I just really appreciate all the work you're doing with this area. And so my question is from a family member who is very pro-LGBT, and she uses the phrase gender is a social construct a lot. I was glad to hear you mention that earlier. And her reasoning is basically that we have all of this psychological research about like gender ideology and like the social, you know, barriers in place or the social influences that lead people to think they're a certain gender. And it's like she's pointing to like the idea that it's all in your head. And then, you know, there's the evidence that we have from like people who are born with ambiguous genitalia that she's pointing to defend that statement. And I'm wondering, like, in light of all that, and then just also in general, like, you know, when you hear someone who says gender is a social construct, how should Christians respond to that?
Thank you, Noah.
Yeah. So good question. One, a couple of things. Just from the start, when people raise the intersex question, just realize that's a red herring. because people who are identifying as transgender or non-binary or something like that, there's nothing wrong with their bodies. Their bodies are perfectly healthy and whole. It's just there's a problem in terms of their self-perception. But the reason why people raise the internet intersex issue is because they want to prove that there are some people out there who have a disconnect between body and mind. But that's a different problem because they're starting with a physical difficulty. And we'll get back to the rest of your question when we're done.
Mary Rice Hansen, a good host for the show as well as guest. I guess you heard the music. Noah, a lot more to say about that, I am sure. Thank you for that question. Again, Mary Rice Hansen, our guest. Our number, 888-318-7884. Whether you agree with us or disagree with us, whether you're Catholic or not, you're welcome to call.
We're here for you. Call now. Catholic Answers Live.
To many people, even many Christians, purgatory is a fantasy, or worse, a wicked lie invented by the church to make salvation complicated and keep people in fear. But I'm here to tell you that purgatory is fact, not fiction. The Bible supports it, Christians have historically believed in it, and it makes theological sense. In my new book, Purgatory is for Real, I provide the evidence and reasoning to help you understand this controversial doctrine and demonstrate how it's actually a joyful, hopeful reality, not something shadowy and mysterious, but a sign of God's love and mercy. To get your copy of Purgatory is for Real, visit shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
Bishop Joseph Strickland of Tyler, Texas, is one of the most courageous leaders in the church, known for his outspoken support of unborn life, Orthodox faith and morals, and reforming Catholic institutions. In his groundbreaking new book, Light and Leaven, he offers a forthright perspective on the state of the church today and calls on the lay faithful to meet its challenges boldly. Touching on topics including parish renewal, the centrality of the Eucharist, the need for prayer and silence in a noisy and distracted age, and the battle between good and evil in the church and world, Bishop Strickland's wise insights and evident love for souls will inspire and edify you. To order your copy of Light and Leaven, visit shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. So happy to be back with you as we start another week. And in the second hour, Carlo's going to be here, and we're going to talk about the Bible blueprint for the church. Does the Bible really have evidence that Jesus intended to found a church? Is it possible that church still exists? That's what we're going to cover next hour. This hour, covering maybe the most important issue of our moment with one of the folks who can really, really speak about it. Mary Rice Hansen is our guest. She is the founder, as a matter of fact, of the Catholic Women's Forum, and she's got a website you can visit called personandidentity.com. If you'd like to get some clear thinking, thinking that is consonant with the teachings of the Catholic Church and with reality in general. Those two things never being in conflict, by the way. You're welcome to check that out, Person and Identity, or you're welcome to call us, 888-318-7884. On the line, we have Noah, and Noah is in Westmont, Illinois, with kind of a two-part question. The first part being that our guest, Mary Rice Hansen, addressed, having to do with intersex people. And you were saying, Mary, that that's essentially a red herring. That's a different thing than a person who's got a perfectly healthy body saying, well, I'm just a different kind of person. But he also wanted to know about just this general claim that people make, gender is a social construct. With lots of people seem to think this is the height of wisdom to say this. How do we respond as Catholics to that?
Well, it's a little bit tricky because gender was conceived to distinguish from bodily sex. So Dr. John Money was the psychologist in the 1950s who pioneered the phrase gender role. And he worked mostly with people who had disorders of sexual development, intersex, or who were transsexuals. So he was experienced dealing with people who had this dichotomy. And so he came up with the idea of gender roles being determinative of who you are, that that's what mattered, how you live it out in society. And from there, this whole thing took off in terms of academia and things. But feminism took that word gender and that idea that biology is not determinative and used gender, insisted on gender being used to refer to women in order to detach women from being hemmed in by sex stereotypes. And so most of us, certainly when I grew up, you grew up using the word gender because it was also in the middle of the sexual revolution or on the heels of it, and people were careful about how they talked about sex and sexuality. But we have to remember, the truth is that sex is the word we want to use when we're talking about male and female, because since the 70s, this idea of gender has been taken over by the academics and the radicals and now the progressive politicians and the activists, and it has become used to refer simply to a your identity as a social construct, completely separate from your sex. The church has only used gender in a couple of places, and the first was when it was responding in a UN document, pushing back on the idea that there were more than two genders, because gender at that time, again, was being used as a euphemism for male or female. So the church was insistent, no, that when we talk about that, we mean the customary view that it means male or female. And then you saw in the document that came out, I think it was last year, male and female, he created them by the Education Department in the Vatican. And they used the word gender and tied it, connected it to sex. But here's the thing, if we use the word gender, we're on their turf, because they're the ones who created it. They're the ones who have defined it and redefined it. So if we insist on trying to connect gender to sex, because that was what we were used to, we're going to lose, because it's redefined now in law. It has nothing to do with sex. In fact, oftentimes, like in the Equality Act, where it talks about gender identity, it says regardless of sex. And that's the typical phrasing. In other words, your perception is completely separate from the bodily reality of who you are. So as Catholics, we have to retool. It doesn't make sense to fight that battle of whether gender, that word, is a social construct. What we want to talk about is your body is real, you're male or female, your identity is as a son or daughter of the Lord. That does not change. There are cultural aspects of living that out, your masculinity, your femininity, and those things can vary from culture to culture, but your fundamental identity is not something that is built by society, that is dependent on cultural stereotypes. And that's what they mean by a social construct, that socially it's determined, there's nothing innate, and yet sex is innate.
Noah, thanks.
So I hope that clarifies a little bit. That's kind of a long...
Well, we got a lot of folks on the line, and I do want to get to more. So I'll speak for Noah. That was perfectly clear and very helpful. Thank you. as you're speaking, though, I realize you said something earlier that I wanted to get back to, and then I will go to the next caller. But Pope Francis actually has been very his papacy has been marked by a desire often expressed to dialogue with the modern world, to be in dialogue with the modern world. And on this issue, it's not a matter of dialogue. He's really forceful. And I just wanted to get your impression of what Pope Francis has said about transgenderism.
I think he's sending two messages. So one is the example that he's given in terms of reaching out to people who identify in this way and treating them kindly, taking care of their needs. So for example, I think it was last year where he sent some money over to a home that was assisting women who identified as men, but who were prostituting themselves. So he cared for them. And I think that's got to be our disposition. Everyone has dignity, and we need to have compassion and care for others. And yet Pope Francis, the same person who's reaching out in compassion, is insistent. We are male or female, and we cannot deny that sexual difference. And he calls it a war, gender ideology, a war on marriage and family. And he warns about the effort of wealthy countries to push this idea on developing nations as a condition for foreign aid. And frankly, we're going to see that under this administration.
I appreciate that. Thank you for the clarification, mm-hmm. Because it helps, I think, because there is an increasing, you know, like everything, the Catholic Church is polarized between right and left. And this mm-hmm. is one of those things that's actually not that polarizing if people will just listen to the Pope and, you know, if people want to have that consistent Catholic view. Mm-hmm. Up next, John in Antioch, Illinois. John, thank you so much for your call. Go ahead with your question for our guest, Mary Rice Hassan.
Hey guys, God bless. You know, this is a very controversial topic. And I guess my question is mainly why, you know, there's so much controversy about this and there's so much debate and it seems that everyone's missing the mark. We're missing the point of Jesus. And to harp on whether someone's living right or not, to me, as a Christian and pro-LGBTQ, it seems that, you know, we're turning away so many people that could be saved by God's grace, mercy, and Jesus's love. And it's sad because, you know, Jesus came here to save everyone. And when we debate stuff like this and say one side's right and another's wrong, to me, and I feel like to a lot of people, it makes it seem like not everyone can be saved.
Okay, and John, I'm gonna let Mary respond to that because I do want to have a little bit of dialogue between the two of you if we could. So, Mary, sure. How do you respond to what John had to say?
I think first you're honing in on something really important, that every person has dignity. Every person is loved by God and should be loved by the rest of us. And that's true, and we can agree on that. But I disagree where you say, why are we even worrying about all this stuff? And here's why we worry about it. Because these concepts, this idea of the person as not being male or female, it's a completely different anthropology understanding of who we are. And it's being forced upon us, on our children, through the law and through our educational systems, through the medical system. And so it is important to have these discussions and to push back on laws that are going to enforce this vision of the person, which is contradictory to, you know, all of human history. So these things have consequences. It's not, and to your point about, you know, shouldn't people feel welcome and things? Sure, people are welcome, but you know, we all show up at church broken and we're all in need of healing, but healing's only possible when you acknowledge your brokenness. And so there's a distortion and a brokenness when someone identifies in a way that involves rejecting the body God has given them. So that's a brokenness in need of healing. But it's not something that we just sort of pretend isn't broken, because you can't find healing until you acknowledge the wound that is there.
John, I wonder what you think.
I feel like the wound in what's broken is that ideology that someone's broken because they feel in their heart that something is wrong, or that, you know, society is putting on a too much pressure, you know? I don't know why people, humans, think that God created somebody and God was wrong by making them transgender, you know? I feel like my main question would be for you is that if your son or daughter came out transgender and that was their truth and God told them that was their truth, would you reject them?
Okay, Mary?
No, first of all, you've built in a couple of premises that are problematic. You know, one, you don't reject anyone. You love your person, you know, every person who's experiencing whatever difficulty. So that's a false dichotomy to say that you have to reject the person. But as a mom of seven, my kids have come to me with all sorts of things where they needed correction, or they needed guidance, or they needed accompaniment to walk down a path that is healthy and whole and pleasing to God. And so it's not that we're saying God made you wrong. Quite to the contrary. You know, God created you male or female. Because someone's feelings or their insistent desire goes in a different direction doesn't mean that God created them that way any more than any of our desires that are that would lead us away from the truth about who we are. Our desires sent from God. Desires can come from all sorts of places that aren't necessarily our fault. It could be our experience, our upbringing. It could be abuse from other people. So feelings don't define reality, which was another phrase you used, was that's their truth. Well, truth is objective. That may be what they feel, and I'm not going to deny what they feel, but sometimes you feel things that are out of order with the truth about reality. And the truth is, we're born male or female. And when you say to someone whose feelings go in a different direction, in other words, they're rejecting their body, they're identifying in a different way, if you affirm that, what you're saying is, it is normal and healthy and good to be at war with your body, to reject your body. So you're encouraging and affirming this split sense, this sense of constant contradiction between those feelings of identity in your body. And it doesn't go away just because someone sort of feels affirmed. There's a continual need for that affirmation because, and it's just not true. So, you know, true compassion and true love walks with someone from where they are, but leads them into the light, leads them to the truth, and all the way encourages them to understand God loves them at every step in that journey. So it's not a question of being loved or hated by God, whether we're you know, perfect in virtue or sinners. We're all sinners, but rather looking for the truth that he's revealed, and our body is part of that truth that he's revealed.
John, we have to take a break. I'm very glad that you were able to get through and have this dialogue with Mary Rice Hassan. Well, I hope you'll feel welcome to call again anytime. 888-318-7884 is our number. We're talking about transgenderism with Mary Rice Hassan. And I want to give out the website again that Mary and others have created, personandidentity.com, where you can explore more about a Catholic response, a Catholic Christian response to the increasing pressure for a transgendered world. 888-318-7884, our number, personandidentity.com is the website. Right back with more Mary Rice Hassan and your calls right after this.
Let us help you with your question today on Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
EWTN, helping people grow in their love and understanding of God.
I just want to share that 5 years ago, my lovely warrior princess and saint of a wife and I decided to adopt a little girl through foster care. She is the perfect round out of our family of three boys and her. Yes, there are challenges. Very grateful today for all the blessings that he has shown our family.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
We have a big problem. Our culture is dying and souls are in danger of being lost. The answer is conversion to Jesus Christ in his church. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a Catholic organization, and we have hundreds of teams spreading the good news throughout the country. But we need your help. The harvest is great, but the laborers are few. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. We're starting off the week with a tough one. We're talking about transgenderism with our guest, Mary Rice Hassan. Mary Rice Hassan is, as she said, a mother of seven, but also is the Kate O'Byrne Fellow in Catholic Studies at the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington, D.C., and the founder of the Catholic Women's Forum. She's also got a website you should check out, personandidentity.com, to help you think through these issues, personandidentity.com. Up next to speak with Mary is Bethany in Ohio, listening on St. Gabriel Radio. Bethany, we're delighted to have you. Go ahead with your question for Mary Rice Hassan.
Okay. Well, first, I just want to tell you guys, this is an answer to prayer. I was, screaming out to God last night just to help me because, we just got an issue last night with my kid telling me that I'm transphobic and that, you know, I obviously hate her. And So I've just been like, Lord, please, please, what do I do? And when I saw this was the topic today, I'm like, oh, thank you, Jesus. So thank you very much for taking my question.
Well, thank you, Bethany.
So I kind of have two parts to the question. The first is my daughter, she's about to turn 18, so we're already in a tough time. And she has autism and post-traumatic stress disorder, the complex kind, along with other issues, severe depression, suicidal ideation, suicide attempts. It's been really, really hard. Part of her autism is that she mirrors behaviors. And so she's, you know, come across different things that her friends have said they had. And she kind of, you know, takes on those types of behaviors. And, you know, around like 15 or 16, she started kind of being around people who were saying they were trans. When she was 16, one of her hospitalizations, I went in to go like visit her, you know, she was in the psychiatric unit. And I, you know, was saying, my daughter's in here. And he said, oh yeah, he'll be right out. And I'm like, what? I'm talking about my daughter. And he said, he. And so this has actually become an issue now with her therapist and the whole Children's Hospital Behavioral Health Unit.
Yep.
They have changed her name in her chart to her new preferred name. And I gave her the most beautiful name after my grandmother's. It's the most beautiful name. And she's rejected it. You know, they changed her name in her legal medical chart. And she's not even 18 yet. They started doing this when she was, like, just turned 17. They changed it all in her chart. And her therapist will call her by her preferred name. And I tried to be understanding of that because I'm like, okay, they're trying to build a rapport. They don't want her to reject talking to them. Like, she's, you know, in crisis. So we want to keep her feeling close and trusting. But this is just reinforced in every way. All these, her psychiatrists, all these therapists, and we have tons of different therapists because she, you know, she's just in a, we've got a team, yeah. And everybody on the team, and anytime she's had to go into the hospital, you know, it's just reinforced, and I don't know how to tell them, and I've tried to change it back in her chart, and then they change it back again, and I'm like, do I not have any rights as their parent? And now she's about to turn 18, so on top of trying to figure out how do I address this with the medical, you know, with her medical team, you know, how do I get any type of support there? Now I'm scared that the moment she turns 18, she's going to run, you know, and never look back. And I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to keep her in my home.
Yeah.
Bethany, hang on a quick sec, because I want to let Mary Rice Hassan talk with you, and then we'll let you continue talking with Mary. Go ahead, Mary.
Yeah. First of all, my heart goes out to you, and I have spoken with many parents in your shoes. So let me just give you a little bit of hope that the Lord is with you and the Lord loves your daughter even more than you do. And so don't despair. However, there are some certain things to realize, certain things that you said. Number one, that she's autistic or on the autism spectrum. These kids are more vulnerable than other kids to this transgender delusion, really, this idea. And there's a much higher percentage of children or teens who identify as transgender who are autistic or who have mental health struggles. So she sort of fits that classic profile. I would encourage you to read a book called Irreversible Damage by Abigail Schreier, where she interviewed a whole bunch of families very similar towards yours. The other thing I'd encourage is there's a group called Parents of ROGD Kids, parents just like you, who have gone through the same circumstance and find themselves at war with the medical community. You need support, you need encouragement to hang in there, to love your daughter, but to remain fixed upon the truth. If you have the ability, I would shift her from those doctors in a heartbeat, because unfortunately, there are certain segments of the medical community that have bought into this idea, and they call it gender-affirming therapy. And they will stop asking questions about underlying hurts and underlying wounds or why she might be feeling this way. Why is it so important to reject her body, et cetera? And they simply say, ah, she identifies as trans. That's it. That's the answer. We're affirming that. And they go with it. And it makes things worse because those underlying things do not get healed. So just in terms of sort of quick response, those are a couple of things I'd suggest to you. But it is worrisome. And you can look on our website too, personalidentity.com. We have a lot of resources there. You have to educate yourself. Let your daughter know that you love her. but try to do whatever you can to forestall her being put on hormones and shunted down that road, because it's a tragic one.
Bethany, your response to our guest, Mary Rice Hassan.
Well, first off, you said parents of ROGD kids. Is that what you said for the support group?
Yes, it's on our website, wonderful. Too. If you go to personandidentity.com, there's a parent section, and in there, there are resources and things. So parents of ROGD kids. And because there's a phenomenon, the ROGD is rapid onset gender dysphoria. In other words, it's kids who never had a problem with their identity. They had other issues. And then they get it from the peers, from their schools, from the internet, and sort of fixate on this as the solution.
Okay.
Now,
and I have one other question.
Go ahead.
One other thing, and this is what came up last night, and she's kind of talked about this lately, but last night it was a whole big blow up. She's asking me for her insurance information, and she's saying, well, I'm about to be 18, so, you know, I want to take charge. And I said, are you trying to get testosterone? And she is. And I don't know, you know, once she does turn 18, what can I do? Like, I don't know.
So hold on. Just like I said, you know, your daughter needs to know you love her. And it's important to raise the doubts about the physical or the wisdom of these physical transitions, just simply on the medical basis alone. Because oftentimes what these kids are hearing from other sources, whether it's the internet or sometimes the medical professionals, is that your parents don't understand, your parents just don't want you to, quote, be trans. And there's a wedge that people try to put in between. But you as her mom love her, and you can express that concern for her body and her physical welfare and say, you know, here's why I was reading about this. This is a real concern. And so that's one thing, but I would not give her the insurance information. Unfortunately, the way the insurance companies run is, number one, they will cover this stuff. Number two, they will not let you have knowledge of what they're doing, because many, especially the children's hospitals, they have dual systems of information where they will keep sensitive information away from the parents. And that's a huge problem. But if you can find a different therapist, I would switch her, because a gender-affirming therapist has one goal in mind for your daughter, and that's to push her down this road. And Bethany, it doesn't mean there's no hope, because there are people who are detransitioners. In other words, they go through this for a few years, sometimes take testosterone. Some of them even have surgeries, and they come out on the other end, and they realize they still have all the problems they had, that this transition thing was not the answer. But at any rate, you need the support of other parents who've been through this. But I would encourage you, while you still have some leverage, to see if you can find a different therapist who is not, quote, a gender-affirming therapist.
Bethany?
Okay.
Bethany,
go ahead. Thank you so much. Welcome. I mean, just one thing. I mean, I do always tell her that there is nothing in this world that she could do that would make me stop loving her. And I do tell her that, you know, God loves her and Christ loves her no matter what.
Bethany, I just want to let you know, I think your expression of your own pain as a mother has been extremely moving to everybody, and gives us a sense of the stakes of what's on the line here. You as a mother being treated that way is abusive, and you never should have been treated that way, nor should your daughter have. Your voice is a heroic voice. In addition to what Mary has said, I want to suggest to you that you consecrate your daughter to the Virgin Mary, who loves her and will take care of her. And we'll be there to assist you. Bethany, I hope you'll call again. I hope you'll stay in touch. Our guest is Mary Rice Hassan.
I'll pray for you.
Yeah, we'll all pray for you. There's many people praying for you and for other parents like you who are going through similar things. Mary Rice Hassan, say again the website and where people can find out more about you, would you please?
Yeah. Sure. So the Person and Identity Project is personandidentity.com. You'll find information there for Catholics and Catholic institutions, Christians as well. Anything about this whole transgender issue that you want to know.
Mary Rice asks, and I hope you'll be on many, many more times. Now, especially now that we've got your audio straightened out. We messed you up a little bit last time you were on, but you are a wonderful guest, and I really believe that your work is heroic as well, and I hope that we can continue to be supportive of your work. God bless you.
Thank you.
Coming up next, Carla Broussard, we're going to talk about the Bible blueprint for the church. Yeah, it's in there. There's a lot about the church in the Bible, and we're going to dig into that right after this on Catholic Answers Live.